At this time, I'm going to introduce the speaker. She's come a long ways to share her message with you. I hope that you can respect that by giving her a quiet space to share that. With that, I'd like to introduce Tina T. from Washington, D.C.
My name is Tina, and I'm an addict. And I'm very, very grateful to be here. First, I'd like to thank the committee for asking me to come and for being so nice to me since I've been here, even from the guy that picked me up at the airport. I've been sick, and I didn't think I was going to be able to share this morning. I thought I was going to be in the emergency room. But when I looked around a moment ago and saw the people standing with the 30 days, I knew why I was supposed to come, whether I felt like it or didn't feel like it. And I like to say to the people with the 30 days that my hope is that you will get hope from my story, like I got hope from someone else's story some years ago at a convention. I'm from Washington, D.C. And I've been living there most of the last 20 years of my life. And I like to take you back further than that to tell you how sick I was before I got to this program. When I was 3 years old, I was forced to take my clothes off, and another kid was forced to take their clothes off, and some older kids put us on top of each other. And I really never was able to shake that. I know you say, 3 years old, you can remember that far back at 3 years old. I can remember feeling so ashamed and embarrassed and taken advantage of. From that point, I was sexually abused a lot by my uncle. I had an incident in my family where my sibling and an uncle tried to put their penis in my mouth when I was young. And I fought them and they peed all over me. And I couldn't shake that. And I kept wondering, why was all these things happening like that to me? So I began to get involved in church a lot. And I was in the church, and I was leaving church one night. And I was jumped and dragged into this junkyard with my little tambourine and my choir robe. And I was sexually abused, and I was beat up pretty, it was a very brutal experience. And I was left for dead. Now, the things that I'm telling you now, I couldn't talk about when I got here. It took a lot of years, a lot of work, a lot of sharing in meetings, a lot of therapy to get to this point where I can share this without breaking down. I was torn up on the inside. My father used to abuse me a lot. And my father told me one day that he wished that he had jerked off on the ground when he screwed my mother and had some shit like me. I can remember that in the back of my mind all my life. I ran away from home at the age of 16 and I found drugs. Drugs at that particular time saved my life. And I continued to use drugs for years and years and years. I dropped out of school, I didn't have an education. I went to the streets and I began to prostitute. I began to rob and steal and lie and do whatever it took to use to live. I'm not going to talk about a lot of drugs that I used, but I will say that I was on methadone 17 years, along with all the other drugs I was using. And when I say that, it's because it was at the methadone center where I went to my first NA meeting. I did a lot of traveling through that time, trying to find myself, trying to get rid of these feelings. I was in several treatment programs. I've been in emergency rooms, locked in psych wards for trying to commit suicide. I mean, number and number and number of occasions I thought that I would have to just die in order to shake these feelings that I was feeling. I remember some years ago, they had a program set up where they issued Dolophines to help addicts. I was on that program. And then they came out with methadone to try to curb people's appetite for drugs. I started on that program. I remember being sick. And I don't know if anyone knows about spit meth. But I can remember being sick and missing the clinic, and I would have to go to someone and try to buy the meth that they had taken and spit in a bottle, and I would buy to drink their spit. Because that's how sick I used to be. There were no do's and don'ts in my world. I was living with a lot of hatred, a lot of anger. And I thought it was everybody's fault what had happened to me all my life. I blamed God. I blamed my father. I blamed my mother for not removing me from the situation. I blamed myself. I thought it was because I was black. My grandfather's white. I didn't belong. My nose wasn't wide enough or it wasn't pointed enough. My lips wasn't thick enough or they... I just didn't like myself. And I rarely would come to anything near that. If someone asked me how was I doing, I was always fine. I had an act as if that acted as if. The things that I had begun to do with my life, I was beginning to hate myself more and more and more. I hated people I hung with. I hated the oil joints that I frequent. By this time, I had holes all over my body from injecting drugs. I was just one big wreck. So I would continue to try to commit suicide. And I end up in another hospital. And the psychiatrist would come. And they would ask me to put these blocks together. And I would cuss them out. What the hell do I need to put some blocks together for? How is this going to help me? You know, didn't know how I needed help. I didn't know what kind of help. And I was always trying to tell somebody what wasn't going to help. I mean, it's real crazy. But anyway, I kept on this journey, this journey of death, until I got to this program. When I got to this program, I was hanging in a park in Washington, D.C. I would get dressed every day to go get my meth and my other whatever I got. And I would go sit in this park with other people that was like myself. One day, it was raining real, real bad. And I went to that park to meet my friends, and I sit there with an umbrella all evening in the rain. They didn't come. I had alienated myself. I was so lonely. But this was my world now. You know, hanging with people that were misfits, just like me. But they had enough sense not to even come into a park and sit on a bench in the rain. But I did. I was doing things that was so degrading to my spirit. One night I was out, and I ran into this blind man. And this blind man was telling me how nice I was. And I robbed him to get some drugs. I couldn't shake that feeling. I don't care how high I got. I couldn't shake it. And it stays with me even right now. The things that I had stooped to, the things that I was doing in order to get money, to find ways and means to get more. When I was going to this meth clinic, I saw some people coming inside in the evening that were using with me, and they were looking different. I don't know if it's so different or not, but they were smiling and laughing, and they was going to this meeting upstairs. I had a get high partner that was hanging with them. Me and this girl used to get high together. She 12-stepped me into the program. She said, "Tina, you really look terrible. You tried everything. You need to go to this meeting with me." I don't remember a whole lot what was going on because I was really messed up. I was suffering from pancreatitis from drinking out of beer cans. I couldn't keep food down. I couldn't keep my meth down. And I couldn't get drugs in. There was no veins left. I was just a pure wreck. I was just a pure wreck. She asked me to come to this meeting with her. All I knew that it was a meeting about drugs. If you mentioned drugs, I was game. I didn't even know they were talking about not using the drugs. And you know what? I took pride in being a dope fiend. I took pride in being an addict. Don't call me a drunk. I ain't no damn drunk. You know, I'm hip. I use drugs. Stick my chest out, because I use buku drugs, much drugs. Took pride in it, false pride. But anyway, I came to these meetings. I don't know what they were talking about. I don't remember who was sharing or nothing. But I remember, as bad as I felt and as bad as I looked, that they embraced me and hugged me, and they told me to keep coming back. That stands out even today. I began to come back to these meetings, and I was going like every other day or so. For another thing, too, they had some cheese, crackers, and some fruit punch. That was another reason I came back, too. Didn't have no money. I didn't have money for those kind of things. My money was for cigarettes and drugs only. But anyway, I kept coming to these meetings, and I began to learn to listen, and I was listening to learn. One day, a light came on. One day, I heard this lady talk about coming off drugs. She went back to school. She got her children back. I mean, I actually heard her this day. And after the meeting was over, I went up to this young lady and I said, "You mean you really don't use no more drugs?" She said, "Really?" I said, "Wow." "You don't use nothing?" She said, "Nothing." So anyway, a light came on. I began to feel worse about myself coming to meetings. I began to feel worse about getting high coming to meetings. Because I had heard people say they weren't using anymore, and they did some of the same things I did. They felt like I felt. And I began to sort of question to myself, maybe it's possible. Damn, that would be great if I could wake up in the morning and not use, if I could wake up and not feel like I feel, if I didn't have to wake up and wonder, what the hell am I going to do today? Am I going to rob somebody? Or what am I going to do? Am I going to trick all day? Or what am I going to do today? That would be wonderful if I just didn't have to use tomorrow morning when I woke up. Well, I kept using. That was just a thought that came in. But what I'm saying is I'm having other things coming into my mind now. Because people was telling me things like, "Tina, you can't come off methadone. You've been on 17 years. It's in your bones. It's in your mind. You cannot stop. You know, along with all the other drugs, you just can't stop just like that. You need some Darvis sets or some Percodans or some to come off that stuff." And that's what I was doing. I was collecting me some Darvis sets and Percodans. But anyway, I kept coming back to these meetings. One day, it seemed like it was the darkest day in my life. I remember it just like it was yesterday. I went to the clinic and I went to get my meth, and the lady asked me, she said, "Hi, Tina, how do you feel today?" And I took that cup from her and I looked at her. And I got angry. I said, "The nerve of you asked me how in the hell I feel. You giving me this stuff and you ask me how am I feeling." But I felt so bad inside. And I walked out of there. I drank that stuff and I walked out of there. I have never been to Howard University Psych Unit. There was one hospital that I escaped. I've been to all the rest of them. But I walked to Howard University Hospital, caught the elevator to the psych unit, and I walked in there and told her, "If somebody don't help me today, I'm going to commit suicide. I don't want to live another day like I'm living. I don't want to go another hour like I'm living." I didn't have any insurance. I've been calling treatment programs. And I'm telling them, "I'm a hoe. What hoe has insurance?" I mean, this is the stupid questions they was asking me. Blue Cross, Blue Shield and stuff. What's wrong with them? I'm telling them I'm a addict from the street. So anyway, this lady looked at me, and within 20 minutes, she had me admitted in the hospital with not a dime. So don't tell me what can't happen. Don't tell me what can happen when you start praying and you start asking for help. Help will come. I went into that hospital, and I've been coming to meetings for a while, so I had my basic text and I had my Bible. Now, I don't know what I was doing with either one of them. Shouldn't have had them both. Definitely shouldn't have had them both. But I was in the hospital reading my fourth step. I got up, got a bobby pin out of my hair, and began to try to pluck my vein out of my arm so that I could bleed to death. And I tell people that I sponsor, time is important in a fourth step. You have to be prepared to get there. You have to believe that it's going to be okay. When I begin to look at my life and the wreck that I had made out of my life, when I begin to look at where I was at and what I had been doing to myself, I didn't want to live. And I tried to end it there in the hospital. Well, they found me and they put me on a 24-hour watch. They had the nurse watch me 24 hours a day until they could get me into the psych unit. And they got me in the psych unit. Still don't know how bad my problem is. Still don't know. And when you come around and you think your problem is not the same as somebody else, it takes time to get clear on what the problem is. Because I sit in there in that psych unit, I was talking about everybody that was up there. I said, watch him. He's gonna walk to that wall and turn around and come right back. He act like he's really going somewhere. So I had been to some NA meetings, so I told him, y'all need a meeting up here. And guess who was leading the meeting? And I just tried to commit suicide. But I got some chairs together, and I got them in a circle. One lady was dropping food all out of her mouth and stuff. One guy was doing a Thorazine shuffle. And I'm in there dizzy as hell, trying to act like I got some sense. And I told my doctor, I said, I don't need to be up here. You know, these people have serious problems. Sit me down. He said, let me tell you something. He said, most of them are here for medical reasons, and you are here by choice. I didn't like that feeling. Whew. You're talking about tough love. But anyway, what he did was, he put the ball back in my court. I remember still going there, feeling okay, and something happened in that psych unit. And I tell it to people, and I tell it to people, and people think that, I don't know what they think, but I tell them about a life and death experience I had in the psych unit. I used to pray this prayer for years and years and years. Now lay me down to sleep. I pray the Lord my soul to keep. Lord, please let me die before I wake. And I pray the Lord my soul to take. I mean, I was living on death row every day with that prayer. And I prayed that in the psych unit. And I got on my knees beside the bed and I said, Lord, let me die before I wake. I had no idea that I could stop using drugs. If someone would have told me that I would have gone as long as I've gone without the use of drugs or something, I would say, you are absolutely out of your mind. You don't understand what I've been through. I got bad nerves. You know, I need something. That's what I used to always tell these doctors. I told my therapist, I'm getting ready to have a nervous breakdown. Can you admit me in the hospital? She said, well, sit down for a minute. Let's talk about it. Well, how do you feel? I said, I feel like every damn thing is caving in on me. She said, well, I feel the same way. So I said, I need a new doctor. This one is beginning to know me. But anyway, I stayed in that psych unit 28 days, and I came out, and I went right back to my meetings. I remember really wanting to give up in that psych unit. I had gotten a sponsor, and I called my sponsor. She said to me, I said, Doreen, it's really, really rough. I said, I can't make it. I'm getting ready to leave. She said, baby, you don't have to go through this but one time. And you don't ever have to look back on this day. All you got to do is hang on in there, keep coming back, put one foot in front of the other, and it'll be all right. And it happened just like that. I came out of that psych unit, came into these meetings, and I got involved. I got in service. We had started some new groups. I started some groups. I was in service like every night of the week because I needed a commitment to be there, setting up the chairs or doing the coffee or doing something. I didn't know what to do with my life. I was addicted to a way of life. Not just the drugs. I was addicted to being on a corner, walking the street, looking for love in all the wrong places. You know, I was addicted to people lying to me, going in bars and stuff, and people telling me how fine I am, we can go places and stuff like that. You know, I was having guys come to my house all times of the night, throwing rocks at my windows and stuff like that, telling me that they was just thinking about me at 2 in the morning. Couldn't keep you off my mind. And I said, wow, I better get up and get dressed, put on a little makeup or something. It hit me one day, how in the hell are you thinking about me at 2 in the morning? But when you used to falling for lies all your life, it's easier to take the lie. So when I started getting clean, I ain't had no money, I ain't had no job. I remember I wanted to turn a trick so bad one night. I went downtown to the area in which I used to work at, unbuttoned my blouse a little bit, started walking around peeking in cars. I said, I don't want this for myself no more. And I remember calling my sponsor up and telling her, getting real to the exact nature. I don't know what to do with my life. I remember going to my home group and telling them that I was hungry. I didn't have no money. But in the way I'm used to getting money, I don't want to do that no more. I remember after the end of the meeting, men and women were coming up to me, putting money in my hand, not asking me for nothing. They didn't ask me for nothing. They didn't try to sleep with me. I went home and I got on my knees and I prayed and I cried and I just rocked. It's been a long time since I had that kind of love. I thought I had it when I was little, but somehow or another I was robbed of that. Y'all gave me that back when I got here. You told me that you would love me
until I learn how to love myself. And since that time, I've been through a lot of pain and a lot of storms. And what y'all said then works now, too. Y'all been rocking me, and y'all been taking me through storms, and oh, man. I remember when I didn't have a place to stay. I was living with people for sex, for drugs, for money, for, you know, I just sold myself any kind of way. It didn't matter if it was men or women. It didn't matter. Nothing didn't matter. Nothing. And I remember I needed a place to stay and how I got my little place and how I got a little chair in there. We call it N.A. furniture. Somebody got them a brand new couch, so they gave me the little chair. That's how it worked. I started beauty school. I didn't have no education, so I went to beauty school. The girl gave me her uniform so I could have some white uniforms to wear to beauty school. The girl wore a size 6. I wore a size 12. No one knew that the pants never came no further than my hip, my butt. But I had a jacket that came down to my knees, so they never knew. I'm talking about, what lengths are you willing to go to get this? You know, some of us, you're probably like I was when I first came here. You complain, you complain, you complain. You want it to be your way or no way at all. You know, and that's what I was doing. But this is what happened. People told me things like, shut up. Learn and listen. The stuff you're talking about will get people toe down. That's all it'll do. It'll get them in the back of a paddy wagon, or it'll get them in a psych unit, or laying on an oil joint floor, puffing, for somebody to go in your neck. So you don't know nothing. We know where you come from. You don't have to go all to when you was 3 years old and stuff right now. Just learn to listen. I am so grateful that I came through when I came through. Some people say they don't like tough love. I needed somebody to tell me straight up that it ain't gonna work here. I have worked around people all my life. I knew what story to tell them. I knew what act to play. I knew when to bring my drama out, and I knew how to do it. With the doctors and psychologists, I would go in front of the judge and I put it on in front of the judge. You know how you get arrested and you try to talk to the judge so no one hears you but the judge? Because you don't want the whole courtroom to know you're pleading for your life. I remember the last time I went to court was right before coming to this program. Right at coming to this program. This was, maybe the judge was in the program too. Because he was the only one that cut me off. I told him, I said, Your Honor, if you give me another chance, I'm going back to school. I already got enrolled in school. And, you know, I'm doing much better now. And he hit on the thing. He said, that's enough. He said, old as you are, you need a job. He said, I looked at your record. You've been playing the system long enough. Don't you go into school. Anyway, he gave me some time and he took it back because I had been in NA for a while. And he listened to my sponsor, took the witness stand. And my sponsor talked about the 5 years at the time that she had clean. And then someone else from the program took the witness stand. And the judge, he looked around. He said, I commend you people.
He said, but the day you broke this law, that's the day I'm going to deal with. He said, I looked out my window this morning, and I looked around, and I saw all this trash on the ground. And I was talking to myself, as I usually do. And I was saying, I see why they got your bent so far from me. But anyway, he said, and I've never given time up and took it back since I've been on the bench. But because of these character witnesses I had, and with the change that I had came about in my life through this program, that he took the time back. And I've been coming to meetings ever since then, I mean, with a different kind of acceptance. You know, I want now for myself a better way to live. I mean, for the first time in my life, I'm living. I mean, actually living through the hard times, you know, through the ups and the downs. I got sick some years ago, and I found out that I was HIV positive. Now, I just knew that would make me kill myself. And I thought about it. I left the doctor's office. And I rode home, and I cried all the way home. You know, I wasn't active like I used to be. I wasn't shooting up. I'd taken this test several times before it came up clean. But then I was diagnosed with the virus. And I remember calling my sponsor up. Because I've got, let me tell you what happened before that. I was sponsoring all these people with the virus. And I was saying to myself, why is God sending all these people to me to sponsor that are HIV positive? And I was going to the hospital, sitting there with them, you know, and they would ask me, I can't eat this. Why don't you eat it? I said, that's okay. I'm not hungry. I mean, I was scared to even be around them at some point. I would leave out of there washing my hands and stuff because I was stupid is what I was. And then all of a sudden, some of them passed, and one in particular had a will signed up for me to take care of all the arrangements and the service and everything, and his father was a minister. I'm saying, why are they putting me on the spot like this? We never know when we interact with each other what the role is. We don't know what God has in store. But this is what was happening. He was preparing me. And I really believe that today. My higher power was preparing me for what I was about to embrace. They taught me how to stick it out. I watched people skin change, color change, whole body frame change. I watched people that couldn't even walk. I watched people, and they still were smiling, saying, I'm going to have my anniversary. And I'm clean. And they taught me how to still stick it out. You know, to go on in spite of. You know, I don't care how dark it gets, and it has been dark in my life. I've been in the hospital several times, gone in, didn't think I was gonna come out. Doctors didn't even know what was going on with me. And a lot of you don't know when you're doing these drugs, what you do to your liver and your kidney and all that stuff like that. It was just so many things happening with me from behind my abuse to my own body. That a lot of times when I went in, I didn't even know if I was coming out of the hospital. I woke up one morning and blood was running out of my mouth. You know, I was getting ready to go to Europe to take this course with Fidel Sassoon's, and I went to the bathroom and I sit down and blood just gushed right out of me. All I could do was call my sponsor. She She said, I'll meet you at the emergency room. You want me to come and get you? I've had spells at home where I get these cold chills and shakes and stuff. And my sponsor have left her job and came just to fix me soup and stuff like that. My own family don't know all this stuff that's going on with me. But my new family in here does. You know, I had a brother to die not too long ago from leukemia. And I want to talk to my mother and I want to tell her where I'm at. But I didn't want to put that on her. You know, and I don't want people feeling sorry for me. You know, I'm all right. I was going through it last night. Before I came up here, I got this chill and stuff again. I was shaking all over. I've been bleeding for about a month. You know, they did a colon exam, everything. I'm still passing blood. But you know, I know it's going to be all right. A lot of times I just have to keep telling myself my story. And I do that to feed my spirit. I have to keep feeding my spirit. You know, I have to watch the music I listen to. I have to watch the people I hang with. You know, I used to sit around and play stuff like Sweet Bitter Love and, you know, My Baby Left Me and all of that kind of stuff and wondering why I'm tripping like I'm tripping. Because I was feeding myself the sickness. So I have to watch what I feed myself. The last time I was in the hospital, there were people there that, maybe the time before that, you never know who's going to show up. You know, this guy showed up out of nowhere. You know, I've been to meetings down south with motorcycle riders, all over white. They love me to death. You know, I've been to the Bahamas, I've shared over there. You know, I mean, everywhere I've gone, God has placed people in my life. This morning, I was so sick. My friends were at another hotel. I was in the room by myself, I was shaking. I went to the bathroom. I had diarrhea, I was bleeding, and I was throwing up at the same time. And I fell on my knees, I was crying so bad. And I said, God, I know you're gonna work it out. I'm talking when you know that you know that you know. I knew when I came up here what I was supposed to come for. So I ain't gonna sit on no pity pot. All I've got to do is just show up. My high power placed somebody right at my door. A newcomer from Washington, D.C. He said, you look terrible. Let me go get something for you. The boy went and got me water. He went and got me a cough syrup for the cough. He went and got me some for the sinus drainage. And then he opened this. I was shaking so bad I couldn't even open the packages. By the time he did that, and then he went and came back. No addict seeking recovery need ever die when I care and I share the NA way. You know, some of us don't know what that means, but you're missing out. You know, I got together some people in D.C. We did a big fundraiser for children with AIDS, gave them the money, did another program for border babies, women leaving their addicted babies in the hospital, raised over $10,000, gave them the money. My bills were behind. I held the money. I can't believe the things that's been happening in my life, the changes that's been coming about since I've been willing to grow up. Since I've been willing to give it back, since I've been willing to change.
through the steps of this program. I mean, I talk steps for a long time. So if you're a good talker, it's okay. You know, all of us can talk. I can go uptown, I can hang. I can go downtown, I can get Thurl down there too. I mean, these are survival skills that all addicts pick up. You can go out of town and school, ain't got to know nobody. Wake up in the morning, not have a job, no skills, or nothing, have be paid by nightfall. But I'm learning another side now about giving, about sharing with people. I mean, I could come up here and talk about the basic text, or I could talk about just any in general, and you would never know what's going on with me. But somehow or another, that ain't giving it back for me. I need food, y'all, for my spirit. I need food for my hope. I need to know how you making it. When I look around and I see people going on in spite of, with the virus or cancer or whatever comes in their way, when I see that with my eyes, I believe. I feel so grateful. Oh, wow, I feel so much better. My higher power has a way of working it out. And if you don't have a relationship with a higher power, you are missing out. My sponsor used to tell me this. She said, maybe there may be the only thing that may keep you from using is the God of your understanding. And believe me, there have been some nights through this journey. See, I left out a lot of things about what we go through in the years of being here. You know, the first year or so, I'm motivated by pain now. So I'm gonna get clean for 30 days. I'm motivated by pain, so I'm gonna get 60 days. Up to a year, because then I got a goal. And I gotta show y'all I can do the year. After the year, I had to find another, feed this addiction in another way. I started dressing up, buying everything I could buy, gold and all kind of stuff. Because I got the impression now to let you know I'm the one most likely to succeed. Around 5 years, you know, I done walked on water by then. I got an answer for cancer. I can tell everybody what to do with their own life and how the program works. But I was so miserable in my own body. I was one of the biggest whores that you could run across. But not in the program. I got to look good for y'all. But I was whoring. I wasn't doing nothing. What I was doing was I had a talking program. You know, I had a quoting program. Around 5 years, what happened to me was I really had to start working on a relationship with God. For me, I had to start going into the steps and doing an inventory. And I've done several four steps, but I had to go in there this time with a searching, fearless moral inventory. And I had to share it with somebody. And when I did that, I don't know about you, I couldn't plug into nothing but all this bad stuff. And somebody had to tell me that, Tina, you're a good person. You're a humanitarian. You've done fundraising for people. You're back in the community. You're doing this and doing that.
But I could never point that out in my own self. After doing the steps, I found out that when I repeat them, they take on different meanings. The longer you stay around here and you work them, you think you did it and you pass it, but it comes back to you. I know what the first step means now. I know what it's like to be powerless. I know what it's like to want to go to the bathroom, but my legs hurt so bad that I have to just wait to go. I know what it's like for my bowels to just break on me. The other week, I went to one of my sponsee's anniversary, and I stopped past my business, and my bowels just broke on me. I was so humiliated. I was so embarrassed. But I cleaned myself up, and I managed to get home, and I managed to call somebody and tell them, this AIDS virus is doing a job on me, but I'm not giving up. See, when y'all taught me about the threefold illness, you let me know that this old frame right here ain't all I got, that I live inside. You told me it was physical, mental, and spiritual. And spiritually, I'm getting stronger. Mentally, I'm getting better. Physically, I'm going through some changes. But you know what? I ain't giving up. You know, not too long ago, maybe about 5 years ago, they asked me to go on all these tests. Drugs. And I want you to know that I have not taken any drugs. What happened was when I first got sick about 8 years ago, I went in the hospital and my T cell count was pretty high. Then it went down pretty, pretty low. And then I began to go to holistic doctors. I begin to go to acupuncture. I begin to go to the masseuse. You know, I begin to try on a lot of different things to work on me, to go inside, to try to get better with my life. And my T-cell count went up. Well, recently, it did a tremendous drop. And they wanted me to go on all these drugs. They wrote me a prescription for AZT and this and that. And I went home. And I put them all in my medicine cabinet. And what I've been doing, I've been talking to people and talking to people and talking to people because I care about my body today. There was a time when you could give me anything. I'd sit down, a doctor write a prescription. I didn't ask him about the side effects. I didn't ask him what to do or nothing. I just took it because he said, take it. But I want to live today. More than I ever wanted to live in my life. And I'm fighting for my life now. I'm participating in my life now. So I've got to make sound choices for myself now. And I've been asking people, what do they do with the medicine? How has it been working for them and stuff? I'm not saying I won't take it when I get home. I'm not saying I am going to take it. But I am saying that I'm still going to try to educate myself, do all that I can do for myself now. I have to eliminate a lot of stress. I have to eliminate a lot of bull from people, you know. And I sponsor people and I tell them, look, don't call me if you ain't ready to work on it. Don't call me with no bull. This program is about growing. And if you don't want to grow, ain't nothing wrong with that. But just don't think you fooling me about it. That's how my sponsors used to give it to me. Ain't that I'm making up nothing new? This is what they gave to me. If you're not through with killing yourself,
you know, just do what you're doing. It's okay. But I'm just so happy. My life is really a dream. I've left out so much in my story, and the time is winding up. But you know, I am so grateful that I came and I met you people. And what you told me wasn't a lie. And you've been loving me and teaching me. I've been bucking a little, and I ain't been doing it all right away. But I followed your suggestions, working the steps, working the traditions, and things have been working out. Today, I own my own business as a result of going to school and coming to meetings and people telling me, you can do it. This is the second business I open. I have a beauty salon. I don't know, I've been able to do a whole lot of things that I wanted to do when I was little, even when I was getting high. You know, but y'all told me, and guess what my therapist told me? You ain't finished yet. You haven't even begun to reach your potential. You know, but I had to get in the arena and get involved. You know, stop being so jealous-hearted, so envious of people and stuff. Look at where they come from. Look at where they're at now. Then find out what they did to do that. You know, I went through a lot of storms in here. I went through some loneliness like I've never experienced in my life. I lived alone for almost, I still live alone. Wow. For 13 years, I thought I had to have somebody. I thought it was okay to throw rocks at my window. You better not come past my damn house throwing a rock at my window now. You know, I have respect for myself. I got my daughters back in my life. You know, I can't explain that. My grandkids come up to me and they just love me. Because I love me today. My family used to come in town to see me, and I would tell them to come downtown where the drugstore is in the center of 14th Street in Washington is where I would be at. And they would have to ride the strip to find me. I've got the same address, the same phone number since I've been in the program. That means a lot. I mean, it's about growing up, feeling good about yourself. You know, learning to change and unlearn and relearn a whole new way of thinking. Well, my sponsor told me that I didn't have a clue what she was talking about. Letting go of all those old resentments. My father had cancer and I had to go take care of him. The man I had hatred for all my life, I had to let it go. I mean, I wanted to make amends, and I get on my knees and ask God to forgive me, but I didn't want to forgive nobody else. And I should have been under the jail, under the cemetery, for all the things I've done. But somebody forgave me. And I used to tell my therapist, what do I do with all this anger? She said, you let joy in. I said, what the hell do you mean by that? You can't hold anger and joy at the same time. You can keep being angry at these people, but you ain't gonna feel good until you let it go. And I learned to let go. I went to try to buy a house. Look, I'm bleeding sick, can't walk, skin feel like a lizard skin. Weak, you name it, it's been happening to me, but I went to see about buying a house. I'm talking about living. My brother, before he died, he said, he was so depressed. And he said, Tina, he popped out of it. He said, Tina, he said, let me explain what I've been going through with you. Everybody's born and everybody's gonna die. But the worst death of all is when you're dying every day in your head. And he told me, I'm gonna live until I die. So I decided that I'm gonna live until I die. And I looked around this morning, I looked out that window, and I just looked up and said, I want to thank you. It was a rough bout this morning, but I want to thank you. Because every day that I'm here is a bonus from God. I tried to kill myself day in, day out. And if I die tonight, I want you to know I lived a good life. I mean, I've been clean 13 years. And out of the 13 years, I wouldn't trade a day of it in. The bad days, the storms, the being without money, being without food, but every time it was provided for me. I haven't wanted for nothing in this program. And somebody didn't show up. I'm talking about nothing. You know, so those people that picked up the 30-day chip, I want to tell you, I don't care how dark it may seem right now. I don't care if you feel like you're not going to make it, or you got your children to worry about, or your family, or... Put everything up on the shelf. Lottie, Dottie, every damn body. And work on you. And work on you for the first time. For the first time, you'll begin to see. People gonna talk about you. It ain't gonna look like it's gonna be no piece of cake. But you ain't got to go through this but one time. I mean, one time. My sponsor told me that, you know this new record out, I wish I could fly, R. Kelly or somebody. She sung that to me at my anniversary. I mean, I can fly now. And the theme of this convention, into the light now. I don't have to run around in the dark no more. I used to hate coming out in the daytime. My girlfriend was telling me that in Alaska, they have more darkness than they do light. I said, wow, maybe I need to go to Alaska. I can joke about it now. Being free, being set free. Ain't no chains holding me now. You know, I looked out the window one day I was using. I looked out and I saw a dog wagging his tail. I said, even a damn dog is having fun. Now you shooting pretty bad. I said, even a dog wouldn't do a stupid thing like I'm doing, injecting stuff in my body and stuff, and sitting up here sweating and shaking and bowels about to break and wondering where I'm going to get something to just get me over till I can get started.
But I'm out in the light now. Into the light. I want to thank you so much for letting me share.